Hello and welcome to Spiritual Not Religious with Tracy Rowe. And again today, Leslie Atkinson has come in, and today we are trying it with the fancy microphone, and she's here in the room with me. So we're hoping that we can have a conversation as great as the one we had remotely last week, but that maybe it will be a little bit less glitchy. So that's the goal. Hi, Leslie. Thank you so much for coming to be back.
Thank you for inviting me. I feel so welcome.
You are super welcome. And you're here in my office, which is, as I pointed out yesterday, I don't have a studio, but I don't need a studio. I've got a big, cool mic. Oh, Leslie, since the listeners can't see it, how cool is my mic?
It's really cool. It's like this big silver bullet.
It's like a big silver bullet. And it has it's just awesome. So anyway, so today on the show, we're going to be exploring more on some of the topics that we touched on last week. And we'll be back in just a moment. So Leslie, one of the things I wanted to revisit from what we were talking about last week, we didn't get as much time as I would have liked, honestly, to explore what are the Akashic Records and what does that mean for how has that influenced your understanding of what makes the universe tick? I don't mean to be too specific in my questions or anything.
What are the Akashic Records? I believe they're a little hard to put into words sometimes because they're an energetic field. And it's an energetic field. And how I see it is that it's something out there that any of us can access. And it's free and open. It's kind of like it's making me all of a sudden think about free and open source code, yeah. Linux computer. So it's like this free and open code, and in it does have the blueprint of your divine blueprint, and you can access it. But I also see it as a place where your individual angels, guides, ascended masters, maybe whatever way that you connect with that which guides you, is in that space. It's like a space where you can reach out and touch to, talk to, and communicate with. And from what I've learned is everyone experiences slightly differently.
How do you experience it?
For me, I mix a few modalities when I'm working in it, and I find the way I experience it best is I tend to write 2 to 3 questions before I do a prayer to invite and connect with that space. And I write those questions down. I connect, I do my invocation and connect with that energetic field. And whenever I connect with that energetic field, I suddenly know if there's interference or not. So if there's any interference, you know, you want to clear that up any way that you know how.
How do you know what interference is?
Good example is the monkey mind chattering on da 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 da. You know, you can hear yourself talking to yourself. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So what happens when a lot of people are first accessing the records, they start questioning if their mind's talking or if they're connecting with their records. And I don't think there's one clear way to answer that other than like a lot of things, just practice. So the more you practice, the more you feel what it's energetically like in your records.
Exactly. Exactly.
So sometimes I may not actually be connecting all of my records, but I've also learned that doesn't matter. I'm still getting clarity from my own consciousness or subconscious, because what I do is I use the modality of journaling while I'm in my records, and that tends to help me. So it helped me.
So like while you're doing it, you're journaling?
So I always have pen and paper ready, and I write the questions down. And once I do the invocation, I tend to flow with journaling. Mm-hmm. And what I found is I feel like I'm having a conversation, maybe with myself, with my best friend. It can feel different at different times. And if I pause for a minute when I first connect, sometimes I'll hear a few things. I might be welcomed. I might see a few things. I might see a location where we're at. And other times I just go straight into asking the question and in a very kind of commanding way. I'm not asking forgiveness or permission. This is my right to know and access and have.
Yeah. You don't all be all like, oh, hi, Albertsons. Can I please buy some cottage cheese? No, because it's just, it's not even, you also don't have to go into Albertsons and say, I must have the cottage cheese. I demand it. Bring the cottage cheese. Because it's, if I could jump in, I'm
going to love this.
That's what I do. But I think that's the thing. I think that's, if we realize that it's, these are spaces that are, that don't require us to be different than we usually are, then we neither feel like we have to walk in, you know, crawl in nor storm in to these spaces. You know, you just like, it's, but by the same token, you go into Albertsons and you say please and thank you. And you say, hey, I can't find the cottage cheese. Can you, which aisle is the cottage cheese on? Okay, thank you. Right? See, so there's the same kind of decorum, I think, in those realms.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's a sacred realm. And the more sacred you create that space, it seems the more powerful it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I've told people is, don't worry about whether you're connecting with your records or not. Just do the practice, right? Because mm-hmm. You could be receiving anything from yourself or from the universe because you are part of all that is. So you will receive truth. And so the biggest thing that I believe is I'm trying to connect with my truth, right? The clarity of my truth and whatever it is. So I tend to ask a question. And I like to put a little initial in my journal when I feel like I'm speaking. And then I put another initial, like RK for record keepers, when I feel that they're speaking to me. So if I choose to read back through my journal, it helps me know when was I talking, kind of? When was I transmitting and when was I receiving? So it's really interesting because you're able to go back and sometimes I'll wait a week or two and then look at my notes and I'm kind of floored. I'm like, where did all those ideas come from? In my normal conscious state, I don't remember that. And that's what I find helpful about the journaling. And the thing I've noticed, if I act upon the things that I receive in that moment, there seems to be momentum from it. But I find that when I don't, it's still true for me. It's just sitting there like waiting. So I think there's something to that and I'm still experimenting. You know, I see myself as kind of a explorer in life. And it's just one of the many things that I'm using as a tool to access my essence, my highest version of me.
Right. Exactly. And so I think one thing that comes up for me is that some of the language that you were using to describe your relationship to it was about reaching, seeking, going elsewhere. And so I'm wondering how much, and of course it can definitely feel that way, but to what extent do you feel or do you consider the possibility that the I in your story is just the construct of ego limitation and the rest of it is just aspects of your total greater consciousness? Like the record keepers, are they separate entities elsewhere? Or are they, because, you know, since nothing is, they must be aspects of the total consciousness that you are a part of. But I think what happens is it often comes up for people is they have this sense of, well, if it's already in me, it must not be worth crap. And so all the valuable stuff must be elsewhere. And if you say, well, it's already a part of you, then, then it's probably not very neat. Do you know what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. Yeah, a few phrases in there they're bigger than my mind can comprehend or repeat. But what I get from what you said is, or I'll just say what came up for me when you were speaking was, is that is what it is. It's a discovery. When I initially started working in the records, I feel like I was giving my power over to something else to tell me what to do.
Right, right.
And that the longer I work with that, I learn that something else is, I see it as a higher version of myself, the best version of me.
Sure.
That's just waiting to be accessed and waiting to be expressed. So by accessing her, then I'm able to see the one that really would satisfy me and fulfill me in life.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start operating from there. But it's taken months to do that. It's just been a process of discovery. And I think I'm still discovering. One of the hardest parts is to realize that we tend to give our power away to something else. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that it's helping me slowly do is take my power back, because I can go back to those notes and see that many of the ideas were under the initials LA, right?
Oh, okay.
Right. Or many of the questions, you know, the power was in the question. The fact I even was willing to ask that question, you know, some of my questions can be very constricting and some of them can be very empowering. And the more you can make your questions empowering, the more open and the more expansive, obviously, the transmissions you're having with this higher version of yourself or this energetic field. So I think that's why I mentioned angels, ascended masters, and all that.
And I'm not saying that those aren't real phenomena. They are, but in the same way that our ego is a real phenomena, but it isn't all that is, and it isn't, it's a facade of mm-hmm. something else.
I can't say they're real or not real, because part of me believes they're real.
Yeah.
Another part of me believes they're not.
Well, what's the difference between real and not real?
And it's just the perception. Like it's.
Well, seriously, like if you're like an ascent, like what would make, I think that's the thing. It's like the ego, the ego decides, oh, well, that's not real, or it is real. And it's only real if it's not part of me. That's what the ego says. Because the ego says, nope, this is all that I am right here. This little two-dimensional mask on top of a mystical consciousness. You're not the mystical consciousness. You're just the mask on top of it, is what the ego says. So that's what I'm talking about, is like this idea that it's only awesome if it's not part of me, is what the ego says. And that's why, in order for it to be, quote, real, according to the ego, it has to be outside of me. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. Like, I love how you explain things, because it makes it make sense. And I laugh, because what happens is my brain then wants to engage and put it on some logical plane. And then the other part of me is going, yeah, but you know what really is real. And it's, to me, it's all real.
Exactly.
Like, so that's why it depends on the perspective, the conversation we're having. If somebody were asking me, is an angel physically real? And I would be like, as a physical entity, not to me.
And the underlying that question is the idea that only physical things are real. And in fact, physical things are probably the very least real of all.
Right, because everything's just energy.
Yeah. So what exactly, just energy. It's just energy.
Energy's amazing.
So I think that is the ego says, unless I can pinch it, it isn't real. And the truth is, I think the real truth is that if you can pinch it, it's not particularly real. It is certainly not more real. And in many ways, it is more of the side effect of reality rather than its source.
It's matter. It's physical.
It's matter. And we have decided that that is the most real. So saying, are angels real? Well, I guess they're not, because I tried to pinch one and it didn't squeal. No, I can't. If you can't. So the most real things are the things that you can't touch, but we have flipped it and believe that the only things that are real are things you can touch.
So, or I could debate that.
Okay, please.
And say that if you believe in like the universal laws, as above, so below. Mm-hmm. So therefore the non-physical and the physical are equal. They just represent in different forms.
Sure. They're equal in the sense that there's not a hierarchy in the first place. So to say that, you know, you can't, so that's why I say it's certainly not less real, is what I was saying. But I would say the origin of matter, I mean, consciousness is not caused by matter. Matter is caused by consciousness.
Which is really cool. You should say that again.
Okay. Consciousness isn't caused by matter. Matter is caused by consciousness. Therefore, if we were to put it into a hierarchy, it makes, which, you know, arguably there's not a hierarchy, but if we were, it would make more sense to say that the cause of the effect has more reality than the effect.
Understood. That's another universal law.
Loves me my universal law. Because you can break them and you still don't go to jail. And I want to also just say, poor Leslie, myself being one of the great loud laughers of ever, like really, like infamous as a loud laugher. I like to be around other loud laughers. And Leslie also is a loud laugher. But today, because we are in my office and there are other people who work in this building who are going to get annoyed if we laugh really loud, I'm trying to tone it down. And poor Leslie, I keep going, shh. Okay. Which is super annoying to when anyone was doing it to me. But
we're transitioning to belly laughing.
You know what it reminds me of is that weird dog from an old cartoon that would go like, do you know what I'm talking
about? I don't know that deadly, cartoon.
It was like,
I'm just experiencing it. That's all I know.
somebody out there knows what I'm talking about. So
post it.
Oh yeah, that's because the people want to know. Well, it's fun. They were doing these races. They were car racing all across the world, and there was this guy. I don't know, whatever. Yeah, so that's how we're laughing today. Yep.
God, it feels good.
It does. So, yeah, that's the amazing thing about thinking about non-linear, non-dualistic, non-time-space constricted things while we sit here in time and space. It's why people who have less of a taste for this kind of discourse just go, oh, whatever, who cares? And I don't blame them. Like, if I didn't have a weird fascination with all of this stuff, I would want to stick a spork in my arm. Just like, oh my gosh, really? Are they going to sit there and count angels on the head of a pin all day? This is like, ugh. But I just have a weird fascination with it. And so, like, so do you. So this is cool to us. We're like, okay, we'll just sit here and talk about linear stuff. Not, you know, anyway.
Well, it's just an opportunity to learn and explore to me. And like, I'm not able to quench that thirst. And then when I started exploring in the spiritual and metaphysical and the healing worlds, I felt at home, even though I had not really been in a city or raised around it. Where some of us, we might have family members who introduced us to it, or we might be in a city famous for that type of work. I wasn't, but it's still the desire to answer the unknown, to look into the mystery and uncover what it could reveal. It's like a wake up with it.
Yeah. And it is, I dare say, one of the only things that's really, really interesting to me. Like this whole arena of topic. And that's its own kind of weird thing. But it's true. Like, if I go to a party and people are not quickly talking about mysteries of the universe in a broad and speculative manner, I'm like, oh, I'm so bored. Gotta get out of here.
Well, I can't say that every party I go to has that.
I don't go to a lot of parties, Leslie. And I probably don't get invited back to the ones that I get invited to the first time.
Oh,
like, is she going to talk about that crap again?
This is our party.
That's right.
Right? So I call lots of things party. They don't.
Okay, well, then in that case, I go to lots of parties.
See?
If that's, there's, they, like, in that case, yes, my life is just one big party.
I just got a visual to share with you that my record keepers were laughing because they often welcome and celebrate me when I show up.
Oh,
so nice. I feel like I'm going to a party when I talk to them.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did an Akashic reading record reading for me one time, and it was really cool. I'm not sure if I managed to record it, but I should have because it was really, I don't know how to explain it, but it was, cause I don't recall everything about it, but I just remember thinking, oh, like while as you're going along going, oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. And they were very nice to me.
Nice.
Well.
I find most people's record keepers are not only nice, but they're usually kind of silly or sassy or quirky. And so it's usually entertaining and fun. And they definitely seem to, at least those that I've encountered, really want to laugh, like how we're talking about, you know, really want to bring joy into the world. But one of the things I did learn is when I started doing readings for other people, I started trusting the reality of it, you know, that it was real and there was something more. And it was interesting because I've been given very specific visions to share with people and phrases and sayings that have uncovered things for them that had big meanings in their life, often that they'll share with me sometimes after the reading or months later, like we're doing now, that help, for lack of a better word, for the scientific side, validate that all that's really going on. But the more I work with it, the more I see that I like your shard example the other day. It's like putting the multiple pieces together, the reader and the observer and the receiver seems to amplify it, right?
Right.
And so that's what's more profound to me and what keeps coming up for me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a sliver of a big crystal that can reflect all the same things that the big crystal can reflect. So it's like a shard of this big multifaceted crystal, and you take off a shard of that crystal and that crystal still contains the capacity to reflect all the light that is in the big crystal. However, as soon as you think that that smaller piece of that big crystal is the whole crystal, it's like you put it in a pocket and there's no light on it anymore. But what happens is people are like, they get that piece of that crystal and they're like, wow, this is really powerful. And it is. So they go, oh, well, this must be the only powerful thing then. Because there can only be one powerful thing. So I don't want to open my mind to like more than this. It's like I already had to like have a major like existential crisis to accept this much power. So let's like, there couldn't possibly be anything else. And so that's why any belief structure, almost I would say any belief structure, has an inherent potential to wake you up and give you a springboard to the ultimate and all of that, you know. But it's important to remember that it's a springboard.
Right. And I just think of them as tools in the toolbox. And someday I like to use the journal, you know, maybe the screwdriver. Some days I want to use the hammer. Right.
Right. And I was thinking more, not even in one's personal toolbox particularly, but that's good too. I was thinking more collectively, like, this person has a legitimate, using the tool of, let's say, Hinduism, or some, they legitimately connect with something awesome. And so then they go, oh, Hinduism, that's the only way to go. And somebody else does that with Christianity. And somebody else does that with Buddhism. And someone else does that with secular humanism.
Well, that's what I love about how you explain religion and spirituality and everything, because for me, religion is just tools in the toolbox.
Exactly.
I love exploring different religions and finding the truth, because they all have truth in them. Mm-hmm. And it's when you know, and you're like, wow, I see the wisdom in this, And I'm going to use this piece from Buddhism and this piece from Hinduism and this piece from Christianity. And that's how I
choose. I don't know that one. What was that one that you just said? Christianity?
Christianity.
Oh, Christian. Christianity.
My accent sneaks in every now and then.
Well, let's start a brand new religion and we'll call it Christianity.
Christianity.
Because that's what I thought you said. I was like, Christianity? What's that? I'm not familiar with this one. Christianity, tell me more. It's
probably me trying to keep my voice low.
Oh. Yeah. For real. And I'm doing that too. But perhaps it will be helpful to our listeners as well, who will not be jolted by our jolting
personality.
Preach, sister. That's like what I... That's like,
you know, when I walk in the room.
Yeah. It's a blessing and a curse, right? Speaking from my own experience.
We're supposed to adjust our audience, right?
Okay.
Sometimes we forget that.
I've been under the assumption I had no audience. So the idea of adjusting to my audience was not even on the radar, but we all have an audience. We all have an audience in one sense.
You have an audience now. Starts with one.
Yeah, that's right.
And we could probably count all your guides.
Yeah, nice. Let's count them. Are they listening to my podcast?
Of course they are.
Are they clicking? Are they clicking anything? Are they? Well, you guys, I need. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, this is such a rabbit hole I don't want to go down. So, what is the most present and up for you right now?
Well, I've really been noticing that my dreams are sending me messages. So I resist writing them down, but I found when I go to write them down, more clarity comes through. So the last few days, I've tried to make myself just pause, even if I just write a few notes, because suddenly as I write those, the words have more meaning than when I just played the scene in my head again.
Mm.
So what's coming up for me now is the dream I had last night or this morning showed me that I have a pattern running.
Cool. All right, great. So that's a nice little cliffhanger. I'm going to go to... an ad from our sponsors, because that's what fancy people say. And we'll be right back. Okay, so we are back with Leslie, and you were talking about how dreams recently have been particularly useful to you in understanding some things about yourself and also some methods that you're using to access and remember that stuff. And so tell us more.
Yeah. So I guess as a child, I just thought dreams were all scary and I was afraid of them. And now they've become another way to get messages from myself to myself. And I found that when I wrote even the one down today, that I'm actually able to start seeing the pattern that it's trying to show me. And oftentimes there's multiple messages in there.
Mm-hmm.
And in this particular one, I had a truck. Which is what I drive anyway, but it was a fancier truck.
It was a fancy truck. Was it like my microphone?
Yeah, fancy like my... Most likely a Toyota or something.
Oh, okay.
And I usually... You know, it was a smaller vehicle, so I always find that interesting because the vehicle is, you know, how you're transporting or communicating.
Sure. So you're saying it was smaller than what you drive normally?
Right, I drive a big Dodge diesel Cummins.
Oh, okay. So in 3D, you're driving a big, big truck, and in this dream, it was a somewhat smaller truck.
Absolutely.
Okay, keep going. This is interesting.
Yes, yeah.
Go on.
And in this instance, we pull up to like a yield sign, and I go to stop and someone else also rear ends me, causing me to rear end the person in front of me. And I realized right away, this is all really my fault. I was too close to the person in front of me. And as most dreams for me go, they don't go fluid like in linear time all of a sudden now, the vehicle's upside down in a yard, and I'm inside a house of a friend who's recently moved to town, and it's a ladies' party, and, you know, we're getting it
started. I go straight to ladies' parties right after I roll a truck. I don't know. I thought I was the only one. But anyway, keep going.
This is how dreams are, though. That's
it
what makes
is.
Them so interesting.
And I had to go there. But not here yet. It is super interesting. So you're at the ladies' party.
She's definitely new to town, and she's such a sweetheart. We've made her late because of this accident. I'm thinking even that she's who I ran into, right? So we get to the party. The party has to start at 7:30, and she just magically makes it all happen in this lovely home, perfect food, and everyone's eating. Mm-hmm. All the while, my truck is outside, and it keeps starting itself.
Wow.
And it's trying to take off, like, and then the wheels are spinning.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
And I'm using the little remote clicker, and I'm trying to, like, turn it off with a remote clicker.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm looking out the window, and I see it, like, hitting other cars, and then I can tell that the guys who are not inside the party are outside, like, containing this vehicle, like, rodeoing it with other vehicles. So now they've put 3 or 4 trucks around it, and it stopped. And I go back to talking at the party with people and mingling, and it does it again. And it does this like 3 or 4 times.
So just to clarify, for those who are only getting audio of this, when Leslie said the guys, she did air quotes around it. So the guys, does that mean those were male persons?
Definitely male persons, but I didn't
male
see
persons,
them.
But you didn't see that, but the no. male persons were out.
They were trying to wrangle
the vehicle that was trying to take off on its own. Oh my gosh, this is awesome. Okay, go on.
So I can't see any of the men or anyone. I just can see now 4 vehicles have boxed this vehicle in. But even though it's boxed in, it keeps starting itself. And it's on its back. It's still spinning. It's flipping over. It's tearing itself up. But it's still running.
Wow. I love it.
Yeah.
So tell me what that means to you.
Well, first it meant nothing. That's what's so interesting, because you're like, what? That makes no sense. That's just a truck upside down. You just had a wreck. You're at a party. That's nothing. And then you start to write it down and you're like, wait, that's a pattern running. That truck keeps trying to keep running. And no
what
one
does
wants
the
it
truck,
to.
What does the truck represent? What aspect of yourself does the truck represent?
Well, to me, it was a pattern that's been running for a long time, that it's trying to go and overwork itself. So it really represents just trying to work too hard. Like, even with it turned off, it's still trying to work. Even when people told it, sit and stay, it didn't sit and stay. Even when people boxed it in, it tried to run again.
Mm. And what does the party and the ladies' party, which I think also got air quotes around ladies' party. So you have the guys and the ladies. What aspect of yourself does the ladies' party?
Hadn't thought that far, but I'll just let it come out however it comes out. I believe it was more to show that the color in life, the food, the fun, the taste, the experiences, and to not let that noise, that bothersome thing, ruin the party, like ruin the fun.
Because
we kept going on and we were having a good time. We weren't even bothered by it. I was, because I kept trying to turn it off.
Yeah. That's an awesome dream. That's so cool. There's like a zillion things about that dream. I really like that dream. Cool. That is, yeah, so you've been remembering dreams more, and I think you mentioned that as you've been attending to them by writing them down, you get more clarity.
Right.
And that's a thing.
Definitely talking to you about it, it's bringing even more clarity right now. Mm-hmm. So bringing it to different senses does something, you know, writing it out, talking it out, hearing it.
Yeah, it's really a powerful dream.
Cool. Heck yeah. Share anything that you're seeing?
Do you want me to?
I love when you do.
Oh, okay. Well, it is significant to me that there was a feminine aspect and a male aspect. And so the masculine aspect of the guys out wrangling the vehicle that wouldn't stop working. And then inside you had the ladies' party that had a lot of nurturing aspects, which was, it was creative. It had more color, it sounds like you said. There was food, it was nurturing. There was this whole nurturing aspect of it, and it was light and fun. And so I'm wondering if it has something to do. And I think it's very interesting that the masculine, so one of the ways to interpret, look at a dream is called intrapersonal. There's interpersonal interpretations and then intrapersonal. So an intrapersonal interpretation, and you want to look at, and it's helpful to look at each dream in both ways. So in an intrapersonal analysis, which I think this one is most suited to really, is you look at every aspect of every person and every object and everything in the dream is an aspect of your psyche. So the guys wrangling the truck are aspects of your psyche. The truck itself is an aspect of your psyche. The women in the party are aspects of your psyche, etc. Okay. So it's interesting to me that one of the things, you know, as you can see, there's like this male aspect, like the archetypal male, the active, the going, the wrangling aspect that we all have, both
the outside, both.
Yeah. And then the sort of more feminine, nurturing, communal sense of community, right, on the other side. So you've got both of those. And it's one thing that I think is interesting that I'd be curious what your thoughts are about would be, were the air quote guys, as I like to call them, out there wrangling the truck, if you were to imagine, what was their intention? Were they trying to get the truck to stop going? Like be like, dude, stop, you know, chill? Or were they trying to get it to go again?
They weren't trying to get it to go again. And obviously didn't see them, which I found interesting, because I could see the women. But what came to me right away when I journaled it was any guy would just go unhook the battery. So why didn't they unhook the battery? And that had meaning to me. Like,
what was the meaning of it?
Well, you know, like your go, 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 your energy is like a motor, right? Mm-hmm. And it wants to keep going. And I wake up and feel like I have a lot of that. And a lot of people in my life try to squelch it or contain it.
Oh, yeah.
So it felt like it was a version of that. They were trying to contain it. But I also felt like they knew it was powerful and intended for something, so they couldn't figure out what to do with it. Because to me, the guy, quote, as you say, the guys would have disconnected the battery. Like, the power source isn't there and it would have stopped running. Why didn't they do that? That was the question that I dug into for a little while. And it was because they still knew there was a value to that energy source, to that motor.
Right, right. I like that. So what is it? So having heard my little interpretation, what comes up for you?
Well, hearing your interpretation let me look at the dream differently, because I didn't know about intrapersonal and looking at all aspects. So sometimes when I would look at a dream, I would see who they represented. I didn't actually look at it as it all being me. So that was really helpful. I can't say that I have words for it. I've noticed the biggest thing in my dreams is I have a knowing right away that there's some message, but articulating it isn't readily available. Mm-hmm. And that if I contemplate or ponder on it for a little while, it starts revealing itself. And so I tend to even ask my guides if they'll send a symbolism or message to reinforce what I was learning. I like asking for anchors or examples, because then it like clears it up, you know, it clears the lens up. So I don't know where I was going.
Well, that's really cool. No, I like that. And what I sense when you talk about it is that when you are getting information, it comes in as a whole. And so it just takes a while to make it through the tiny little, like the bottleneck into linear stuff to make it into words. And so I would say, if I could make a suggestion, to try to let go of some of your impatience with that, because I can sense also that you're impatient with yourself about it. So I mean,
I want the answer now.
Yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? Or you want, yeah. Or even that you want to be able to explain it right now. And I get that. Anything I ever learn, there's a part of me in the background. Okay, well, how are you going to teach this later? How are you going to teach this later? And which I used to feel, there's part of me that felt a little embarrassed about that, because it feels like, dang, Tracy, like, just why do you have to? But then A Course in Miracles says, which I really am enjoying studying A Course in Miracles right now, but it says, the only way to learn is to teach.
Makes it real.
I guess so. But it's not like, you know, it's a helpful thing or it's a thing. It's like, it says the only way to learn is to teach. And I was like, oh, well, then that's just probably me wanting to hurry up and learn it better, you know, maybe. And also because, you know,
because I know it's how I truly learn. I receive a lot of information when I take a course or read a book. But it's somehow the word real has stuck today from our talk earlier, but it becomes more in the 3D plane for me when I try to teach someone else. And that's one of the things I've loved about my consulting career, because a lot of times what I've done with that is I go in and I learn, whether I'm learning their culture or their process or a new process, but I learn it quickly because it's my style. And then I receive it, you know, yeah. I accept it in, right?
Yeah.
But then I try to quickly show someone else, mentor God, or teach someone else how to do it. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, that's what that meant? Oh, how smart that was. And I can just see all these layers of how clever that idea was or that process was, that I could feel and know when I received the information, but I couldn't express or tell until I was using it actively.
Oh.
And that goes back to the Akashic Records. I can feel and know it's true, but when I use it and share it and use that as a tool, it becomes clear. And for me, working with my hands seems to help, whether I'm talking with my hands that you can't see right now, or writing in the journal, brings that dream forward, brings that message forward. So,
very cool. Wow. I'm really, really, really glad that we got to do this today. And I bet you know, feeling pretty positive right now that it's not going to be as glitchy as last time. And that's good.
It's a good thing.
Because glitches are a drag, but at the same time, they're just gonna happen.
They're part of the reality we're in.
They're part of being not a tech girl, but
maybe
or haven't. I haven't up to now. Okay, those of you who have ever had to deal with me for longer than 20 minutes will be annoyed if you don't hear me say this. Up to now, I haven't been a tech girl. But I'm willing to be a tech girl, and it is well within my potential to be as much of a tech girl as any of the other humans. And there you go. And so we'll just see how that rolls out. So anything, any final thoughts or words? It's a lot of pressure, dude, because I'm not editing this out. So you better come up with something good.
I can say that it's something good, but it can't not be said. Your statement right now, for those of us who know that you're working through your tech issues, I can say you experienced it prior to our interview and you powered through it gracefully. That's why we're here, right?
Thank you. So. Yeah, thank you. So, all right.
Celebrate.
So, woo! I'll celebrate it. That's the celebration sound. Okay. Woo! okay, so I hope you'll come back. There's more juicy goodness in there. So I hope you'll come back for a future episode.
Absolutely.
All right. Any upcoming things you want to make sure we don't forget about or blah, 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 anything coming up? Any dirt biking?
Oh, there always is. Right now we're starting jet skiing season. So we'll be out at the lake now.
Jet skiing season. Oh, I forgot. You know, and she just came back from lacrosse.
In Vancouver, Washington.
She's like sporty girl.
And then
she's sporty spice.
And then we went off to Cannon Beach and hiked and all the things.
All the things. Nice. I really think that's a good life. I do. I have a new vision board that isn't done yet. I mean, I have a board
in progress.
It's in progress in the sense that I went and bought a new board. And I have a file that's called vision board stuff where anything I think might show up in a vision board later, I put it in this little file. But I haven't started it yet. But I know that one of the things that's going to be on my vision board is more travel. Because I really have not manifested travel really since I had the kids. And I think that's a belief I had about what I had to not do. Whoopsies. Oh. See, if this was like a super fancy podcast with a lot of production value, we would have to edit all of that out. But I'm not going to edit it out.
Because it was mom.
It was my mom, which is cool.
That is later. Cool.
She is having it is her birthday on Sunday.
Oh, happy birthday.
I know. It was pretty neato. She's doing good. So doing well and good. So
invite me back again.
Yay! You are officially invited and we will make it happen soon, I hope. So everybody, don't forget to visit Leslie at her website at
LeslieAtkinson.com.
LeslieAtkinson.com and me at GreaterMindIntegration.com. And do you know off the top of your head the website for the cool reality show thingy that we talked
Amazing
about?
Amazing Giants TV. So it's AmazingGiants.tv.
AmazingGiants.tv. Cool. All right. So, and talk to y'all next time.
Bye-bye.